for your free and easy vehicle pickup. Thank you for supporting 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites.
Yes.
Now with more WTF.
What?
Awesome technology fun.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Tell us more about this.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Gruvaus.
Lee is out this week.
No, I gave him Barrett time. He was going to hand deliver it to me at 8:57. Uh-oh.
Whatever. All right, visit us online at geekradio.com. I destroyed and rebuilt the website tonight, or the other night, last night. I went to run the WordPress update, and it blew up.
Wow.
So.
Hacker.
I hacked and then restored the site all on my own.
Cool.
Yeah, so...
How much downtime did we rack up?
About half an hour.
How much
That's
money,
not bad.
How much money did we lose?
Yeah. How long were our revenue streams down?
All of it?
All of it. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Start completely over.
Is it just me, or is there static?
When I was coming in, there's... static. Yeah, there's static on the outgoing signal,
I don't hear it.
The show is static.
I hear static on my headphones.
Do we need to go ground something?
You're grounded.
Come on, let's just start.
Let's put somebody in time.
Thanks, Flicked. That's helping. It's almost canceling out the white noise.
Can you come do that all night long?
In Barrett's,
a white noise machine.
In Barrett's apartment.
Scare away the zebras for me.
All right. Visit us online at geekradio.com. Yeah, I installed a plugin called WordFence, which is a WordPress security plugin that allows you to monitor things that are happening to your site. And it's interesting how many people are trying to log in to the admin page.
Wow.
Like, is it thousands, tens of thousands?
No, not like that. It's like, it's a couple an hour.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you like on a list where, you know,
no, I think people just have these drive-by bots that just go to...
Oh, they're bots.
Yeah, it's got to be bots that are doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, looking for WordPress install, you know, in this case. And
yeah,
I'm
looking
sure.
for a WordPress login, looking to see if the website uses the host
default.
Name as the username and password.
Are we running failabin on the Linux side?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, if people are, like, running cloud instances or, like, you know, you've got your first or, you know, last Amazon EC2 cloud server, that you can get them really cheap, and you don't want to go configure a lot of firewall rules and write rules that say, like, hey, if someone tries to log in more times than this in this many seconds, kick them out, failabin. You can just, you know, apt-get install failabin or, you know, what else, yum install failabin. Your package manager of choice, install failabin, and it'll do all that for you because you look at your logs and it'll be like, you know, like 10,000 root logins since yesterday. Some of those servers, especially in the cloud, it gets pretty ugly pretty quickly.
I've pretty well gotten, though, like for SSH, since basically the uses for shell are so limited anymore other than as a hole where people can drive through.
Yeah.
I just turn it off and I'll go in and activate the service when I, you know.
Oh, that's cool. Way. So it's disabled completely. So you can't even get in through port 22.
Right.
Okay.
So it's off. And then when I want it on, I go turn it on. I go enable it through another way, you know, basically. One thing, actually, the place I host, I won't give them a plug. But,
yeah, let's or give it.
I'll give a plug to
an attack surface
to the good technique, which is that at the data center where the server that Geek Radio is on, they have as an automatic part of having a server there. There's a VPN access. So that you could, you know, if I really was, you know, ambitious and had the time and all that, you can turn off all those outward-facing, you know, FTP and those kind of outward-facing services that you don't want to expose, and then have people go through, set them up through the VPN, so they're going to only go in through there and it be secure from end to end. But, you know... Knock on wood. We're more of a danger to the server.
I'm more likely to crash the server
than any external threat. Ever since I stopped having OS Commerce sites on any of my.
Jay hardened the server so much we can't even get in.
I was having fun. I mean, it's been really busy at work because we're going through this giant integration and mail migration that's taking months.
The guys are leaving.
Huh?
All the men are leaving. Sorry.
I see what you did.
Mail
there.
Migration, yeah.
All hail the mail migration.
The entire IT department left.
So, you know, on our corporate network, we route a NAT network, the 10 network. You know, since nobody uses the 10 network, really. Everybody uses 192 or one of the others. And so someone called in and said, well, I get on the VPN. I can't get to any external sites. I said, well, what network are you routing? He said, how would I know that? I said, okay, well... Here's how you figure it out. And so, sure enough, he's routing the 10 network on his home network. Comcast, on their new routers, routes the 10 network for some reason. So I connected to his machine, and I said, okay, so we need to see about reconfiguring your router. What's the login for your router? And he goes, I don't know. And so I went to, I got the gateway address 10.0.0.1 and plugged it into a browser, got the Xfinity login. He goes, well, I don't know the username and password, so I just typed admin and then password, and sure enough, boom,
wow.
Right in.
There's only about four if you try, you're likely to get in if they haven't changed.
If you know the vendor, too, that helps.
Yeah, so, yes, hacked him. Hacked him good. I hacked him into functionality. So, yeah, it's kind of frightening because there's, you know, there are a lot of people out there that, you know, count on people leaving things either blank or default. On different logins, and you know, if you've got automation on your side, you basically write a script and run it, and it just goes across all the IP addresses and looks for a login, and if it gets one, it tries one, and then it moves on.
Well, it's good to know too that Comcast is getting away from the 192s because we run 10s on the inside of our networks. Everything is 10 dot whatever. Yeah. 10s all the way up to 90s. So, yeah, that'll kill a VPN if you try and overlay. You know, if you try and VPN from the same subnet into a very similar subnet, stuff just kind of gets caught up in.
Yeah, you're looking for the corporate intranet on your NAS or something.
Where is that? I'm just trying to watch Plex, and all I get are TPS reports.
God, I love Plex. I've just got that rocking so good right now.
It's on everything. It's kind of, if I forget, like, if Plex doesn't, like, play something, I forget that, oh, yeah, there are native players for that. I just, out of sight, out of mind.
All right, so yeah, visit us online, geekradio.com. You can also hang out with us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, and the channel Tech Bytes. We host the show within a show there on the IRC, Internet Relay Chat. It's kind of like what Twitter wants to be or could have been. All right, so yeah, Static is still getting to me, but that's all right.
I'm not getting any in mine. Maybe
it must be my headphones. Let me try a different set.
It may just be the left channel.
Try those. Yeah,
keep it off the left ear.
No, that's better. Infinitely better. Thank you, Peter. You saved the show. Because you know it's just going to be this irritating thing in my ears. For the course of the evening, just
for the 2 hours,
just
the last
making me a little edgy.
That last 5 minutes will get a little
kill everybody. So we had a great geek gathering, I think.
Yeah, we had a lot of old timers come out.
A lot of people showed up, so that was nice. You missed out if you didn't come out. The weather actually was not too bad. I was surprised that we could sit outside and not be gross.
We had Groove House, but no Flicted.
Yeah, where were you, Flicted?
On the road again.
I went
traveling.
I went to Universal City.
Oh, really? You should have called me.
I went tubing on the Guadalupe on Saturday, and then Sunday we wandered around San Antonio some.
Cool. Huh. Cool.
Came back, and people started getting sick, and so now I think I probably have strep throat.
Great. Quarantine. Thanks for showing up to the show.
Yeah.
Thanks for licking Groove House's microphone for the show.
Thanks for offering me some of that Smoothie King smoothie there. Some of that smoothie.
But I made sure and waited until after I drank from it, though.
I know.
Pestilence.
We both might not be here next week.
What? Well, Barrett's not going to be here next week.
So the geek gathering was good?
Yeah.
It was good.
All right.
So who showed old timers? Who showed up?
Let's see. Dun, dun, dun.
People whose last one was at Con, or not Cons, at Cones, right?
Coffee Grounds, I want to say.
Cava Canes.
Cava Canes. There's the,
what? Cava Canes? That's like 10 years ago.
Well, that, the
that's old really old timers.
Yeah, it's serious old
timers. I'm thinking, you know. Coffee Grounds is you know, still an old timer. It's 3 or 4 years, I think. Two or three years.
I'm looking for names, good. So I don't leave any of the old people out.
It's definitely good. So. It wasn't our regular night, so we didn't have, like, the whole...
Yeah, we moved it, and there were other things going on. Chris and Victoria, I remember.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of... They haven't been around in a while. I think they actually moved back to Houston, so we might be seeing more of them.
Is he still Ubuntuing?
I don't probably. Know. I don't know. I would assume, but I don't know.
But we were in between a couple of parked cars.
Yeah, they never made room for us. So it was very long and narrow and shotgunny.
Yeah.
Probably from not being the normal night, he didn't think of it until the geeks started streaming in.
Yeah, Jeff Ragsdale was there. David Trong?
Yep.
David Tong was there.
Tong, sorry, David. Yeah, handful of people.
Lots of people got debriefed. Barrett brought some stuff. DEF CON.
Yeah, we didn't really fire that much of it up, knowingly, but we brought back the goods from DEF CON. People flipped through like the programs and looked at the records and saw some stuff, but we didn't really fire up any of the SDR stuff or anything. We've got four different people that are kind of fans and listeners to the show, all brought back Hack RF1s, which is like a software-defined, like, it can listen to just about anything, and it can also talk. So if you know, no one's ever gotten, like, four of them together before, I don't think, in Houston or Texas. So if you know what we can do with four, let us know. Come out to the next geek gathering.
Which would be right around Labor Day weekend, right?
Yeah, just a couple weeks away.
Ahead, it's surprisingly not that far away.
Aw, Jaylee and Groovehouse have known each other for 8 years. I know we talked about this before on Facebook. It's not on Pixar. It didn't happen. Do you guys have documented proof of friendship before Facebook?
Probably the MySpace archives probably. Of
this
probably
radio. The archives of the show.
Yeah, there's that.
I wouldn't say we were friends. It wasn't until Facebook that we legitimized.
Didn't really solidify stuff till then.
Formalized it.
And all
it's
right.
Been eight so wonderful years.
It's been eight wonderful years. You're welcome. Thank you. Really, I owe you big time. A sack of groceries at the least.
At the least.
At the least. Cuckoo.
Right? Yeah, I owe you.
All right. So we're glad you could tune in. We're going to have a good show, I think. So we will see. We're going to turn it over to Peter Hughes on the Technology Bites Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, and since we don't have Lee, and, you know, it's a different kind of show, and I'm here in the studio, that also helps. If there's something you want to speak up on during one of the stories, we can do that just as part of the news.
Although, listeners at home, we won't be able to hear you.
You can yell at the radio and throw stuff all through the news if you like. This one, there's like I said, there's just sort of a ton of interesting different things. It's been real dry for a large part of the summer, and now I guess school's about to start up, and so everything's kind of cranking up. Last week, Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. took to the editorial pages of the New York Times to continue his campaign against something we haven't really talked about, but Apple and Google have decided to turn on strong encryption by default on the smartphones running their newest software. The op-ed was titled, "When Smartphone Encryption Blocks Justice." He argued, along with law enforcement officials from the UK, France, and Spain, they argued that securing smartphones in such a way that only their users can unlock them, that by doing that, that Apple and Google are undermining law and order. It's a debate that's been going on for nearly a year, and almost everyone outside of law enforcement has concluded that strong encryption is good for security, and that putting backdoors into encryption for law enforcement is bad for security for a lot of reasons. The New York Times piece won't inspire many people to change their minds. The examples and arguments were pretty weak, apparently, as commenters pointed out. I found, you know, this and everything else we're going to talk about, every other source for the show, is up at geekradio.com, right up on the front page with links, so you can, you know, read the stuff that we skipped. But
I love links. I use that to browse the web all the time.
Vance and his co-authors are right about one thing, according to Salon. Criminals will make use of encryption technology just as they've leveraged pretty much every other technology in general use. The thing is, I'm trying to think, is there any other technology, any other thing that we say, well, you know, criminals could use cars, so the police should have special keys to get in your car? Or
criminals wear clothes.
Criminals break into your house, so there should be a special cop door on the side of your house.
Bruce Schneier gave a talk recently, just like an hour and a half of just him kind of talking and answering questions. And one of the things that he said was good was that, well, here, just to back up a little bit, if you use encryption, if you use strong encryption, you're going to throw up a red flag. That those communication channels are going to stand out. The NSA, probably in all likelihood, is going to record that communication. Whether or not they decide to break it then or there, you know, that's a whole different story, but they will at least capture it. And he said one of the best things we can do are get more companies using strong encryption by default, because it puts that many more signals out there and it obscures the people that are using strong encryption. We don't stand out as much as everyone else. So really, I mean, if you really want to communicate covertly, don't use encryption right now, because they're not paying as much attention to those.
Well, the sad thing is, you know, what was that encryption that was used on the worst terrorist attack on the country? Oh, none. They talked about birthday parties and soccer games, and it was all code where they used normal words that had special meanings for them, and that was it. It wasn't like one-way cipher stuff, or the pads, the number pad thing. Where
yeah,
you
one-time pad. Yeah, it's unbreakable. Yeah, if you outlaw soccer games, only soccer moms will be terrorists.
So, the list of words that trigger, you know, attention from the government is pretty crazy. But here's the thing about it. The problem that they come up against is the numbers, the real numbers. When it comes to smartphones, there were 3.1 million victims of smartphone theft in 2013, which is double the number from 2012, according to 2014 estimates by Consumer Reports. According to that same report, only one-third of smartphone users bothered to require passcodes to access their phones. And so some of that, so encrypting it by default means that those people's stuff, their data, doesn't get stolen. So it's kind of like, let's put the balance out there and go, okay, well, so 3.1 million people whose stuff won't get taken, their data won't get stolen because of encryption, versus how many people really are the feds going to, would they need the back door for? The FCC's 2014 numbers are a bit lower, but still indicate annual smartphone thefts in excess of 1 million. In comparison, oh, and here's the number of cases where the Manhattan District Attorney encountered an encrypted phone, iPhone it couldn't unlock, which is 74 cases out of the 100,000 cases it handles per year. So, you know, the other thing, the increasing the kill switch on software on some smartphones, which allows an owner to remotely disable a phone that's been swiped, has helped deter smartphone theft and bring the numbers down somewhat. So it actually, you know, who'd have thought that once once they let you, you know, blank the phones and lock them, as opposed to, oh, say, AT&T or the Apple Store resetting the phone for you, if you just had a neat story about how your cousin gave you this phone, so they'd set it up with a SIM card and give you an account regardless of where they thought the, even though there's a serial number in it and all the things to identify it was stolen. Anyways, just
that's not when they can sell a plan.
Yeah, really.
New account.
Not when they can get $20, well, get $100 a month for setting it up. But anyways, the other thing, though, is now apparently smartphone theft has been moving to be an international affair, so that they take the phone out of they block the signal and ship the phone out of the country, and then you can't, you're not going to get to it. You're not going to be able to, apparently it doesn't work across, you know, international borders.
Did you see that story providers. About the guy who had his phone, he lost his phone or got stolen, and then months later photos started showing up in his iCloud account from small province in China.
Yes, and he recruited locals.
And he recruited locals to find the guy, and they found him. And he ended up going to China to visit this guy, and they got to be great friends, and
they were celebrities.
Yeah. T-shirts made. Yeah, yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah, it was a huge deal. So I want my phone stolen by some clever guy, you know. In, not necessarily, it wasn't stolen by that guy. He just, you know, he
happened to wind up with it.
He wound up with the phone, because, you know, that's how you get phones in small provinces in China.
You go to the U.S. and steal one, and then you go all the way back.
So, long story short, you know,
short story long.
These, you know, here's a good one, just, you know, in case you're in the corporate world and you think, well, no, we should have this factor. 83% of the smartphone finders tried to access corporate-related apps and data, with 45% attempting to access corporate email. That's why, oddly enough, the FBI itself recommends encrypting your phone. Even as the director, James Comey, has joined the anti-encryption crusade. So it's kind of, you know, oh, for us, we need to be protected, but you need the clear plastic jumpsuit, you know. So anyway,
well, they're saying, too, a lot of people now, instead of, you know, going and getting, I guess, like credentials off websites and people's credit cards, a lot of these, you know, if you lose your phone, a lot of times it's tied into your bank accounts. Maybe you've got all your information on there, and that becomes a big source of identity theft, too, you know, unbeknownst to people. And I think that they said something like $2.6 billion are lost annually to that kind of theft. That's like $433, $6 million men they could buy with the same kind of money they're spending on this. They're losing
that
on this.
That many
rather.
Steve Austins?
That many How Steve Austins.
The ultimate cosplay. So, you know, the main thing about that kind of stuff is if people pay attention and think about it and make their opinion known, that's how you stop not clever ideas that are just about, you know, frankly, I think it's sort of laziness on the part of law enforcement to just wanting as opposed to having to do the work. So, you know, because one of the things, I'll say, here's the thing, the other thing for you to learn, if you're among that big group of people that don't put a passcode on your phone, put a passcode on your phone. If you've got an iPhone 6 or actually an iPhone, 5, I think, started it, the fingerprint recognition thing, the biometric like that, it takes 5 minutes to set up. You just sit there and put your thumb or your whatever finger you're wanting to use on the button. You just keep tapping it until it says okay, and then your stuff is safe. Or, you know, as safe as it, you know, there's always, you know, we've talked about baseball bat decryption before, but it's
now
safe from the
for
just
your thumbs.
The general, you know, if you just drop it somewhere or if it gets stolen or any of those kinds of things, it's a lot.
I don't even think the new iPhones will let you not password protect them.
They default towards it. You can tell them not to, I believe. You can decide you won't, but they really encourage you.
You know, if for no other reason, put a passcode on your phone to keep from butt dialing.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
You're not going to butt dial. And if you're really drunk, you're probably not going to make that embarrassing booty call if you can't figure out how to unlock your phone.
The other nice plus to me is more and more apps, and I think this is something that I think is going to spread everywhere. There are more and more apps, you know, like on the iPhone, if you have the print recognition, you can substitute that for having to put in your passcode.
Yeah,
or
my
PIN.
My bank sites I use goes off of fingerprint, and apps downloads and stuff you can authenticate using a fingerprint.
And that, I will say, if you're wanting to save time, that is the most quick way to get in, especially so you don't have to remember, like, okay, the phone was, you know, 1234, and then
you still have to remember because every time you reboot the phone, true. You have to put in the code.
Or if you've got Android, you can actually set up trusted places. So it'll, like, you know, you can say, like, okay, home, you know, don't ask for a passcode, but the second the phone gets away, you've got to have a passcode. So worst case, you just bring the phone
That's
back home.
Cool.
Yeah, a little bit.
Where do you live?
Yeah,
need to get
your phone.
I gotta go home.
So then they'll steal your phone and then follow you home. In better news on the, just a quick little side thing of the FCC. I don't know if you've ever been to, like, a convention center or that kind of stuff where they block you from using anything but the Wi-Fi that they make available at the venue, and you have to pay.
Well, they don't tell you necessarily either. At least I've had a lot of used back in the day, a lot of phone call supports, you know, from, like, we've got salespeople out on the East Coast, and it's like 6 a.m. and they're at a trade show, so it's 4 a.m. our time, and the hotspots we sent them out where, you know, even though they're working, suddenly they won't work, and what are you guys going to do about it, IT people? And this explains a lot. I really kind of want to cross-reference, like, all these support tickets with this thing against this company and just see how much of a headache they've caused us.
Yeah, the company is called Smart City Holdings, founded in the basement of the Houston Astrodome. So Woo! They're around. Maybe they're listening now.
Might have to make a side step on the way home from the trip. After the show.
Smart City provides telecom services to convention centers all over the country and charges $80 for a single day of Wi-Fi service. Matters worse, anybody who tried to get around the fee by using a personal hotspot, basically the FCC caught the company using a Wi-Fi monitoring system to block hotspots that attendees tried to use to provide their own Wi-Fi. Not only is that rude, it's illegal. And so they're going to be paying $750,000 for what they did. This comes less than a year after the FCC issued a similar penalty to Marriott for blocking guests' Wi-Fi hotspots. And it certainly makes one feel at least slightly better about the Federal Communications Commission for more things. So huzzah to them on that. And you know, we'll just go back and forth between good stuff and bad stuff. Now, this one's interesting, and no, it is not a diss on Windows 10. It turns out, you know, Windows 10 is getting out there and people are using stuff, and now it's been found that it won't run older CD-ROM games. Because any game that uses secure ROM and safe disk, remember those? There's a whole lot of people who are, like, probably holding their head or, you know, kind of massaging their temples when they remember those particular DRM mechanisms. The sad part is that those mechanisms are gone. They're not in Windows 10, but people still love to pop in their old Grand Theft Auto 4 or Spore DRM-laden discs and play some of these classics, but you can't with Windows 10. Windows 10 does not allow the secure ROM and safe disk DRM schemes to run, which means the games will fail to start. And like I said at the beginning, this is not a diss on Windows 10. What this shows and what it means is that it shows how digital rights management is just an obstacle to people. It's not saving them from piracy. It mostly is making inconvenience so that now, you know, those DRM schemes went from 2003 to 2008, so we're not that far out from those. You know, we're 10 to 12 years out from the oldest of them, and already they're obsolete, and it means you can't use.
Hold on. So the publishers aren't going to come out and release Windows 10 DRM versions of all the games, and you're like, the publishers went out of business, they won't get back together and somehow magically make everything work?
And of course, you can't. It's not like you could crack it and reverse engineer it without the DRM and distribute it to people who have legitimate copies that they paid for of it. So the DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act. There have been multiple stories. Apparently, the reason is it's up for renewal. Every 3 years, apparently, the DMCA goes up in front of. It's not like renewal like. To keep it going, they have to all agree. It's mostly that they can renew it and tweak. And so, of course, any interest group that wants to get changes pushes on it every 3 years. And one of the places where one of the current examples that was a problem is people who have, like, construction equipment, particularly like farmers, the software on those things is getting more and more involved. And except when they want to get their tractor repaired. I heard a story on NPR where if they want to get their tractor repaired, they have to go through the authorized dealer or have a rep come out to them, even though, I mean, it's really kind of down to the stopping the little blinky light kind of stuff, because they're not allowed to touch the software, and the DMCA means that they can't, you know, they can in no way learn their way around it or block it or get it.
I got the same story from a long-haul truck driver, and more or less he said, like, if the trucks break down, they're disabled in such a way that even if it's a simple fix, they're just shut down on the side of the road and someone has to come out or, you know, like, enable it over, like, the truck OnStar system, but it goes back to the manufacturers and they're locked out. They can't just send a mechanic out or fix it themselves.
Jeez. And then I almost printed it out for to bring in for this show, but it was too much stuff and I'm gonna blank on it. There was another basically similar story. It was about Texas and the companies that the patent trolls in that, which ties to all this stuff, use Texas as their place to their East Texas,
the East Texas
courts
court.
In East Texas are the courts of choice. Because even with there's a new law that's called Alice that's supposed to make it easier to get rid of frivolous suits about copyright stuff or patent stuff, the court here, the courts outside of Texas, 80% of the time, 70-80% of the time will dismiss the case before the first hearing. The ones in East Texas, oddly enough, only 10% of the time do they say that there's that ability to stop it. So we may keep an eye. We may look at that one and come back to it. But you know, these things all kind of swirl together. And the tough part is when it's this magical made up right that they come up with, and get bad laws to protect it. The consumer pays for it. And doesn't win because essentially it's licenses to print money for the business. And, you know, frankly, the people who made Grand Theft Auto 4 are still around. So it seems like they should have to pedal their lazy butts out and get something where people could, you know, can use the product that they purchased. Not that you have to have a museum in your home of every level of software usage that you choose to... so that you can still use it, so that you have some kind of pristine old copy of Windows XP. that you can still run your games on, so that you have to keep that setup going and running and not have it wear out on you, and all that. So, in other news, some of this is new stuff, but some things don't fit. They're not really ready where you'd try, buy, or fry them, so they're kind of newsy, I guess. Google, the modular smartphone, Project Aura, has been, the trial on it has been delayed. They pushed it back. It was supposed to go on trial in Puerto Rico this year, but that's been pushed to at least 2016. Also, it's going to take place in a new location in the U.S., so we don't know where, but the team blamed, quote, lots of iterations, unquote, in the design, which was first shown off in 2013. Basically, for those of you who don't remember, it's an attempt at creating a smartphone that comes in bits and pieces that you could, modularly put it together, replace the screen or the batteries.
Upgrade the camera.
Yeah, so you could swap out, or there'd be extra slots that you could add functions that you didn't know about when you bought the phone, or that you have a new need for, extra storage, or, different kind of networking, or whatever. Obviously it's not a simple thing to do, so it's unfortunate that there's a delay, but there is one in case you were following that story. And on the more positive side, this is sort of wild. There's two stories I've got about solid state storage, and they're both good stories about solid state. It's not like the ones where, there's this new drive that'll come out in, 5 years and cost $1 million. The biggest problem right now with solid-state drives, especially for performance junkies, is actually getting the speed out of the solid-state drives. Apparently, there's a 750 series SSD from Intel that really highlights the problem. It marks a major turning point for the PC when these drives are powered down and thrown into the scrap heap in a few years, they will still be remembered for ushering in the era of non-volatile memory express, NVMe. What it is we're getting into issues of the controllers bringing in latency and slowing down your solid-state drive. Think about it. If you run an SSD on protocols, commands, and queue depths designed for a head moving around a spinning disk, it's a little different. NVMe is designed for a greater magnitude of parallelism. Among its most impressive specs is the ability to manage almost 65,000 commands at a time versus 32 for AHCI.
Well, again,
post-control interface.
Just a small set of needles that only had to move. You only had so many needles and so many platters. So you only need to do so many rates at one time.
65,000 versus 32. A little lopsided. Today's SSDs may not be able to push that many commands, but, think of it as headroom. That's some room for the future. And then that gets us to the port that you connect up to, serial ATA, the SATA port. SATA Express was supposed to be its replacement. Unfortunately, they underestimated today's storage needs. The problem is SATA Express is currently implemented in PCIe mode, it also does plain SATA, has a maximum throughput of 10 gigabits per second theoretical using two lanes of PCIe Gen 2. That's better than the 6 gigabits per second of SATA, but not by much. And, frankly, as an aside, we have networks that go that fast now, physical distance networks that go 10 gigabits per second. So what's past that? SATA Express, basically the industry doesn't think SATA Express is going to be where we plug in future SSDs. The other option seems to be M.2. It was called NGFF, or Next Generation Form Factor. M2 can support up to four lanes of PCIe Gen 2 or Gen 3, which is almost 4 gigabits per second, theoretically. We get into where the B, whether it's capitalized or not. Yeah, see, the difference is 6 gigabits per second And then the Gen 3 stuff is 4 gigabytes per second. I almost missed the, you know, basically they do 4G, and then if the B is capitalized, that's megabytes, which that's big. You know what that is. Megabits, not so large. I mean, it's not small, but it's not as large as bytes. That's like, that's why Technology Bits is a much smaller show than Technology Bytes. It has a lot fewer hosts, a lot
fewer laughs, fewer yucks, fewer insights.
All around. The problem with M.2 is its limited capacity. It was always intended to be a laptop storage option with the chips mounted on it. So that limits it to 512 gig drives. So there's another option. Well, there's a few different options, but you know, it. I think part of the problem is that there's not the clear answer other than, you know, PCIe Generation 4, which is a spec that won't be available until next year. And of course, once they have a spec, there's how much time before it's actually out there. So unfortunately, the problem with solid-state drives is you could really buy one now that can outperform the system you can put it in, unless you pay attention. So, and then, you know, the other side on the solid state drive stuff, I don't remember if we talked about this one previously or not. Samsung has announced a 16 terabyte solid state drive. Yeah, I have a feeling that costs like a nice new car, but, while the size is impressive, you know, frankly, any drive, you know, if somebody came up and had a little box and said, this is a 16 terabyte hard drive, you know, single box, that's pretty impressive. But it's a solid state drive with flash memory chips. You know, it's the before this, the largest 2.5 inch SSD was 4 terabytes. At a cost of around $6,000. Mm-hmm. And so now they've gone up to 16 terabytes. This is the part that's interesting to me, is because I remember, you know, when there was the first, you know, megabyte hard drives, you know, and they started where it was just, you know, 10 megabyte and some of that. And then they hit that point where it started to really jump, and you had 400 and so on. Now we're starting to have that happen with terabytes instead of, you know, we've gone past that being gigabytes to having terabytes being the jump. And you know, at some point, certainly I think they've already gotten past, I don't produce data fast enough to fill that kind of large drive, but you know, as Jay certainly would know, it's not that hard. If you are a photographer or you do anything with audio or video, you can pretty well generate a lot more data and have need for more. So you know, it wasn't a surprise, you know, the fact that there's a 16 terabyte solid state drive that's been announced means that it certainly gets onto the roadmap for your future. Patrick Moorhead, president and principal analyst of More Insights and Strategy, says, I would expect in 3 to 5 years for a 2.5 inch 16 terabyte solid state drive to be in a workstation class notebook. So meaning the high end stuff, the stuff that you pay a couple grand for right now, like a there's any number you can get from the PC world. It's like a MacBook Pro with a Retina screen type thing, that 16 terabytes would be the standard solid state for.
We're so unfamiliar with that. We don't really even have a shorthand. Like, we've got megs, we've got gigs. It's not teras. It's not, you know, and hopefully we won't. Pets could be too ambiguous. That could be confusing.
So
that sounds so much like tuberculosis. Yeah. There's no, what are we going to call? Are we going to be doomed to say, go through like a year and a half, 2 years where you've got to say terabyte every single day?
Tibbies.
Oh, no, even that, no.
Sound like cat ladies, so we all sound like old cat ladies.
And then you go to X's. Okay, how many X's do you have? That just gets, yeah, this, the golden age was with when we left Gigabyte behind.
You know, and this isn't the only technology. Basically, we've talked about the Intel and Micron one. There's a Toshiba one. And so this is the start of a race, a new race, that is for a lot more capacity and a lot more data storage in smaller devices. I'm frankly, I'm fascinated for the idea of when the first 16 terabyte tablet, you know, iPad, Android tablet, whatever, you know, imagine that when you can carry around just about every permutation of data that you could possibly.
The internet up to 2003.
You know, you're going to go on the, yeah, you're going to go on a plane, and so you basically have the thing pull down the 16 terabytes of stuff that you that you might be the most interested in today. Although, I guess, see, then we get into that problem of you're going to pull that through your 100 megabit internet connection. You know, unless you're on Google Fiber and you have a gigabit connection, even then, think about how long it would take to move the data into that device. I mean, even with Thunderbolt or, you know, 10 gigabits per gigabytes per second, I guess you could. Then you could. Then it'd be mathematically make sense. But, and I guess the last one I've got. It looks like the story from Afflicted, it's not opening well. The site is not responding. It was such a reputable site to call on. One thing that, you know, this one, I'll let you go. You can go read it. It's a longer article. It's a great article.
We've mentioned it before, too. Yeah.
Talking about why is Flash still the major video technology for a lot of major players, and of course, you know, the main thing is obviously they can, it plays across more platforms and you don't have to do as much stuff, but even so, with all the security problems and all the other stuff, it's nice to see somebody wrote an article and tried to investigate and figure out why Flash is not dead yet. And then let's see, I'm sure we can find I can find some substitute content for the big story. Was of course the Ashley Madison thing. At least it's a big story to two categories of people. One, people who think it's funny that all those, you know, the people who were cheating and signed up at a site and, you know, actually put their data in there and thought that it would be trustworthy. Those people are very interested. And then the other people who are very interested are the ones who actually did sign up and
Now, has anyone actually confirmed that the data dump went back to Ashley Madison? Because I know there's like a 9.1 gigabyte dump out there. It's pretty big. It's got like heights and weights tied to the profiles, their credit card numbers and stuff like that. I haven't downloaded it. But there's been some question as to did the reporters fire off too soon before they actually verified that it was from that site? Because, of course, Ashley Madison tweeted earlier and they said, hey, it's... we're going to look into it, but there's no definite tie to us, which, of course, is probably what they'd say.
They did update it. Let's see.
Yeah, I thought that they had not denied that it was their data, but not verified.
Yeah,
it
it was still kind of fuzzy
But other people were looking through it and said, I saw some people saying that it appeared that it probably was from that site, but I don't know if anybody has a way to know for
what's
sure.
Scary too is just the size of that data dump, but how many people must have been using that service, which is a little bit
one,
you know,
of the problems
too.
Though is that maybe a lot of people don't realize Ashley Madison, you know, when you sign up for a lot of sites you have to like get an email at the address you used and you have to confirm that you have that email. They never did that. You could sign up with any email address you liked and keep logging in, and it worked. Some of the articles I've seen talked about looking through it, and they found a lot of bug me not type addresses in it.
Did they get paid by the subscribers, or how did they make money? Like, did they have credit card numbers on file? They did. There were credit card numbers that were found in the dump. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how.
Yeah, there were several files, and one of them had credit card numbers. Although they said that the credit card numbers had been part of the credit card numbers had been redacted, so I'm not sure if it was full credit card numbers.
So is it more just to show off and say, like, hey, we have it, versus actually, you know, open up a lot of cheaters to identity theft? But at this point, someone may want to trade their identities away.
One slightly used.
one slightly tarnished.
Slightly tarnished identity.
I read an article that was somebody saying, you know, do you think that this will cause, like, a huge wave of divorces, like, immediately? But this person was saying, because nowadays you don't have to prove infidelity or anything, they don't think so. Like, it basically, if a relationship was already bad, like, this could be what breaks it. But there's a percentage of people that always try to work things out. And then there's also a lot of times, you know, a process that it has to go through before it. This could be something that leads to it, but not necessarily the end all. So there may be an uptick in divorces, but it could be over a period of months or years. Plus, just because somebody got an account doesn't mean that they necessarily did anything. I mean, you don't have proof that they were doing anything.
Yeah, although it doesn't go over well. Just to take one example that I found, because, of course, what do you think reporters did once this came live?
They made sure they weren't in there? For
after they checked to make sure they weren't in there. Well, they know that. But, no, went looking for celebrities.
Hey.
And one that... the one that just came up the fastest that I found is Josh Duggar, family values activist Josh Duggar, whose job was at the Family Research Council. They found credit card transactions to Ashley Madison totaling almost $1,000 for two different subscriptions from February 2013 until May 2015. And they put it together with some other stuff that has, like, what kind of things he was looking for to do with somebody extramaritally, etc. And the thing is, it does overlap. This is from Gawker, so of course maybe it's... But it's if you Google Josh Duggar, there's a lot of information, and that apparently matches up with, you know, there is enough stuff that it sure looks like.
Now, to go back to Pete's statement earlier, though, that they didn't verify the email addresses, you could go in and put whatever email address you want to.
The credit card transaction.
Oh, no. I was just going to lead in that Tony Blair is actually showing up in the list of email addresses.
It was tblair at something.gov.
Yeah, labor.gov.uk. I bet you that wasn't actually him. I bet you someone put that in there as a joke.
Yes, well, think about it. There's the smart thing to do. Of course, you'd have to be sort of, you'd need to be more looking forward so that you could, like, use people who are, like, candidates for stuff or who are in primaries and of whatever. You know, I'm not espousing one way or the other. But if you really want to make it fun for the reporters, you know, if you're making your fake account, you want it to be, like, you know, somebody who's in the running right now in the presidential primaries or somebody who wasn't a celebrity then but now is could work. But, yeah, so that's, you know, and the thing about it is that's our hacker report of the week. You know, the big hacker type, you know, the thing I would want to note is notice that there is a major hacker deal, event, something tied to large-scale hacking now every week, even on slow news weeks during the summer when it's fairly quiet and all of that, the hacking continues.
Well, that's, you know, that you can tie that directly to DEF CON. You know, the first DEF CON, there's probably 100 hackers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, just the number of people that are just curious about it. And the main thing now to get notoriety, it's not so much, at least with the older sect, isn't so much to go hack stuff and say, hey, I hacked this, or more importantly, don't say, hey, I hacked this. It's to discover vulnerabilities and then actually get those into proof of concept and then write tools and then distribute those tools. So whereas before, to get your hands on the stuff that would let you do a lot of these things, having to go write the code yourself, you kind of had to meet people. It was kind of handed over on disks and what have you. Now these guys are putting up world-class tools, you know, out there for anyone to get. It's pen testers, legitimate users alike. Yeah. But a lot of people can go out and grab stuff. You know, they can go grab the internet equivalent of a 50 cal and just go shoot it whatever they want to, aim it wherever they want to. You know.
Well, and the odd part is I caught the end of an interview that was talking about all of these. There's not, you know, that was talking about somebody who had hacked Facebook. They had done malvertising where they had sent a package, you know, they hacked people's friends lists and then sent a payload. And the guy had made, his fine could be $250,000. And when you added up what he got paid for the compromised accounts, you could fine him that and he might have money left over. But the thing is, it's not like in the movies where they go, we've got to hack company X and we'll take every effort and da-da. No, it's basically Well, who do you want to hack? Which one? Yeah, wherever the low hanging fruit is where they go. It's not like there's some kind of big effort to go after one place. It's go look around and find the, you know, who's open.
Yeah, the big secret is that the offense is when it's not that much of a secret anymore. The offense has been winning for about 2 or 3 years now. The attackers have the advantage, and most things just seem to be broken. If someone wants to get into something, chances are they can, give it enough time.
And the security on these kinds of things has apparently been laughable. Mm. You know, lots of security through obscurity. Oh, nobody will ever think to go to oursecureserver.ourcompany.com.
Well, that, and I think one of the big things, at least like in our industry, has been that everyone is a lot more security conscious, but the way that they're dealing with it is they are saying like, hey, fill out these checklists, or hey, do these audits, or it's they're attacking it through compliance. And really, compliance doesn't really secure anything. It takes dollars and, you know, hours and everything, resources away from actually securing stuff. So compliance should be when you're completely secure, completely dug in, maybe go do some compliance, you know, paperwork and documentation at the top. But really, a lot of companies are putting that first. They're like, oh, well, all our paperwork's in order. We're secure. When really, no, you've got great paperwork, but everything else, you know, your barn door is wide open.
Well, plus you've just standardized your setup.
Yeah, so, and you know, people know what to look like, you know, look for, rather. Yeah, yeah.
So they know that every company that's certified under blah, blah, blah is using the same approach. And once you've cracked it, well, you've got a nice laundry list of who you can go to. So, you know, it's interesting, you know, Barrett codes and I code.
Barrett codes.
You know, so you write this stuff. And so some of it is, obviously, I'm not doing stuff on that kind of corporate scale, enterprise type stuff. But you still go through the kind of every time you create something that generates accounts or that, you know, fortunately I'm doing more like web e-commerce, which means that you kind of outsource. If there's data that's that important, it's better to like keep
that. Don't hold it. Give it
some
more.
It's better to keep that at like authorized.net or somebody else who's going to be on the hook if it doesn't, if there's a problem. But, you know, how you handle passwords, that's been evolving. And we can talk about that more in the next hour.
Ah, so relaxing. Such a casual conversation. So
I don't want to jinx it, but I was about to say perfect show.
With Flicked at the controls, everything goes smoothly. All right, well, we're going to take a short break. That music tells us it's the end of the first hour of Technology Bites. Turn tape over! We're going to take a short break, and after these messages, we'll be right back for more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
The Summer Sizzle Fun Drive is over, but the needs of your Pacifica radio station still go on. KPFT and Electro Love Radio Show are having a fundraiser November 7th at Last Concert Cafe. Electro Love Fest will have bands from Houston and Austin, and we're looking for supporters interested in the great perks sponsors will receive. For information on how individuals, artists, professionals, social groups, and businesses can enjoy the benefits of sponsoring, call Robin Lewis at 713-526-4000, extension 315. She'll be happy to help you, and we want to thank Houston for keeping us on the air for 45 years. We hope to see you there.
Just tell them you're looking, go get something cooking.
Some say the internet has hurt the art of letter writing, but here at KPFT, stamps still get the love and respect they deserve. Did you know you could write to your favorite shows, request a program schedule, or just share your ideas on programming, outreach, and more? Quick, write this down. KPFT's address is 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006. You can send a letter to your favorite shows in care of KPFT, kick your program idea to the program director, or give your pledge to our membership department. Even if you don't have internet access, reaching out to KPFT is as easy as picking up a pen. Show your stamps some love. Again, the address is 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006. You are listening to KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. We now return you to Technology Bites.
My goodness.
Whoa.
I mean, whoa.
Everybody awake?
I'm awake now. Yes. All right, welcome back to the show.
I love my new ringtone.
Oh, yeah, you have a new ringtone.
I love it.
Please tell us more.
It's my favorite video game.
Have you oh, yeah.
Do I afflict its number?
No, I have it on vibrate.
Oh, man.
He loves his new vibrate.
That's why he likes his new ringtone.
Call me again, Barrett.
All right, on it. Is that why you never pick up?
Oh, he picks
all right,
up.
Dialing. All
right. Oh, it doesn't work.
Oh, Pete's not even on.
Ready to try it back? No, it was on. It was on here.
Yeah, it was on
it's
his.
On here too.
Try it again.
Yeah.
This just seems like a replay the other night. There. It's still not working. Call back.
That'll work.
Still not working.
Now
it's,
it'll work.
It's dialing.
I muted my computer, so now I'm just going to
hear it better. Yes. All right.
If I keep letting it ring, will I get a high score? So we guessed it this last. We guessed it this last week, and I failed miserably, and I still forget the name of the game.
Wizards of War.
Wizard. Single.
Wizard
of War. W O R.
Yes.
Yes. Not to be confused with like actual war.
Not to be confused with Game of War.
Game of War. I don't remember that one.
No, that's a modern game that has, what's that girl's name, lady's name, the advertising?
Oh, with the model.
In the milk bath.
Yeah.
Yeah, they advertise it a lot.
For some reason, yeah, since she's in it. Well, that's one thing that I guess there are some places you can go to, but there is a sound that if you didn't go into an arcade in the 80s or really early 90s, the just ambient, all those different games all going at the same time, there is a particular sound to that a lot of people, I guess, have now, you know, now there's a lot of people who aren't old enough to have ever experienced it. Because it was kind of overwhelming, just like all mm-hmm. the different colors and all the all that, but the sound of it when you started coming near an arcade, you'd hear
all these.
Vegas
may be
the closest thing you can get with like all the slot machines, you know, but they're slowly getting those out of there too. They're all digital, you know. In that respect, they don't make all the sounds they used to.
Well, you knew you arrived at the arcade when the sound of the place that you were drowned out the sound of the coins jingling in your pocket as you walked down the street. With, you know, if you were really feeling flush, you know, well, actually it wouldn't jingle because you'd have a roll of quarters. That's when you were in 1978 or 79 going down to the arcade. Probably go with a $10 bill and just buy a roll of quarters. But every once in a while you'd have a roll of quarters when you got there. And cracking open a fresh roll of quarters to play some Asteroids or some Space Invaders.
So by 1980, with the exception of maybe the roller skate rings, it was all token-based. You'd have to go get, like, the tokens for that arcade.
Right.
At least where I was.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, in Colorado, yeah. It was like that.
That wasn't – not where I was. I mean, I was
I remember
I was
those
that.
To a certain extent.
And we cut you a deal, like you put in a 5, you get 2 extra tokens. You put in a 10, you get 4 extra tokens, you know. But it's still 25 cents. It's just like equivalent to quarters.
Getting your money back.
Yeah, only if you got home with them in your pocket, you couldn't spend it. And you're like, well, maybe I've got to go back to the arcade.
Yeah, so that last bit, those last 3 meant that you went back and, oh, well, you got another $10 worth. So
just when I get out,
extra
pull me back in.
Speaking of Vegas, I realized that, you know, to Vegas... You know, we were talking about Vegas, and, you know, obviously we were at DEF CON. Talk about how Vegas used to be kind of cheap, you know, except for losing all your life savings.
Except for losing your shirt. You at least got a free meal.
But you can eat free and get cheap rooms. But nowadays, Vegas is even cheap. You can't even win at the ATM machine. $5. I think it was $5.99 for it was the transaction fee.
That's what mine was.
It was insane.
And I hear next year they're going to $5. Double or nothing. Take the money out.
That would be something, huh?
It's like, but I was only trying to get $10, and now I get none, and I pay the fee.
So does anybody watch Mr. Robot? Anybody keeping up with it?
I am.
You watched the last one? There's one on right now. I just started.
Yeah, but what about my prediction?
Shh, shh. Can you guys keep it down? I'm watching Mr. Robot.
Yeah, so my prediction has come true.
You think it has not been able to keep pace?
I don't think anything has been settled yet.
What can we clarify what your prediction is?
Well, my prediction was that he is completely imagining everything. Like kind of like a Fight Club thing.
That hasn't panned out.
I started watching for clues like that to see if like the Christian Slater character, if other characters would make eye contact with them.
Well, did you watch it last week?
Yeah, I think I've seen almost all of them.
Everybody was looking for that, and the first 3 or 4 episodes, it did that, and then all of a sudden, he talked to Darlene.
Yeah, in the bar when they were in the bar.
Yeah.
But she was also drunk and could have just been talking to herself, but I don't think so.
It's not an exact, like, you know... I just thought it was, you know, in the style of Fight Club, and now it's turned out that all these people that he's hacking with are his family. It's his dad.
Well, you know about all of them, but...
Well, his dad and his sister, at least 2 of them.
Yeah, that's where things got kind of fuzzy for me, because I was coding while this was on in the background, so I thought I missed something.
You still don't even know, we still don't know for sure. I don't want to do any spoilers, right?
Well, he's having a psychotic break.
Obviously, but the thing is...
Which is pretty much what Fight Club was. The guy had a psychotic break.
He's kind of figuring things out.
Kind of like Wizard of Oz. She had a psychotic break.
No, no spoilers on Wizard of Oz. Hold on.
Yeah, I haven't seen
There's no
that
place
yet.
Like home.
He's kind of figuring it out, and Tyrell is like completely derailing.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Man,
he's going insane.
And Elliot's pulling it back together. But we still don't know, really. I mean... This last episode opened everything wide open for, like, any possibility to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to start looking for red doorknobs and Haley Joel Osment throughout the series. No.
Young Haley Joel Osment?
Young Haley Joel Osment. Yeah, I know he made a recent movie. No, not that one.
Definitely, you know, it's going to be one of those series that is going to finally just really, really get good. At the season finale. No.
Oh.
It's going to finally build to, like, I mean, the story's been kind of shaky and kind of, it's been good to watch for the details and things like that. We're talking about Mr. Robot, if you're just tuning in, but the details and the character development have been good and steady, but the storyline, I mean, even taking down Steel Mountain or whatever, kind of weak, not really exciting. There hasn't been a real, like, you know, yes, they've finally done something, or this has finally been revealed, or this is happening.
Nothing's ever really working out. Like, everything's kind of, like, not working.
Well, I will say, you know...
That never happens in tech.
When the guy he got put in jail figured out who he was and basically cornered him into freeing him, I thought... How is he going to even get out of this? And they settled that just by killing the girl.
And there were some crazy, crazy twists in that episode where it was like, okay, they got a plan. Well, the plan just fell apart. Okay, now there's a new plan. Oh, that plan just fell apart. Like, yeah, that was a...
Well, the German guy, I don't know if when he logged into his shell.
Is it German?
I think he's German.
Is he German or Russian?
It's not Russian.
Tyrell.
Tyrell, he speaks Swedish.
Is it Swedish? Or is it? It didn't sound
I think he speaks Swedish and his wife speaks Finnish, I think.
Okay, it's definitely not Russian.
Or
so that
Danish
makes
sense.
That's the sleeper story.
What's going on there?
What's happening with those two?
You know, so I was watching some like behind the scenes stuff today about some of that, and one of the things they said was that, remember the, I forgot that guy's name, the guy that worked at Steel Mountain, the first guy he talked to that was a real nice guy that he just like ripped apart.
Had to tear him down. Yeah.
Yeah, they said that they actually had to refilm that several times because the studio execs said that the character was too nice of a guy and he was being too mean to him. But the second thing was that they said that originally, in the original versions of this, they had pre-written, I think, the first 8 episodes before they actually started filming anything. And that they said that originally what happened with Tyrell and that lady on the roof, that wasn't what was supposed to have happened. But they decided it would make a much better story arc to have that happen instead of what was supposed to.
I'm not entirely sure where this whole non-hacker story arc is going, other than Tyrell, when he logged in, he secure shelved into another server with TAC-L space username space the server address, which I don't know why you would do that. Why don't you just put username @? I only use TAC-L if I forget that I'm like, you know, my user accounts changing between hosts. So that the show's lost all credibility for me at that point.
Oh, yeah.
I don't believe anything anymore, yeah. They were so technically on, and now it's just...
It's turning out to be a lot like
fiction. It's a problem if somebody uses -L?
Well, if you use -L before, they're wasting 3 keystrokes. There's no way that guy's a Unix guy. 3 whole keystrokes he's wasting.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he said he liked KDE, so he's not the... You know, he's not on it anyway.
He might have just been a holdout. He just might have been one of those guys that just say they like KDE just to say they like KDE because they just like controversy.
He's also working to classical music.
Yeah, I don't know. Stallman's on. So, Jay, you were concerned that the show wouldn't be able to keep pace from the very first episode. Like, do you think that there's been a lull? Are you still excited about it?
I think the first episode came out of the gates. Like, yes, there's infinite possibilities here. It needs to be weird. It needs to be... interesting. But the story, and I expected that the story arc was not going to be predictable, and I'm not sure that I got sold on the whole Christmas.
But that pinball-y, you know, it's pretty pinball-y right now.
I agree. I mean, I still have it. I don't know if it, I mean, everybody's talking. I like it. I want to like it. I think there's some elements there that make it really good. The hype is good about it, but I don't know.
Well, see, I thought it was like, at first I was like, oh, this is Fight Club. Like, this is going to be Fight Club.
That's what I said.
And then after you know, the 6th or 7th episode, I'm like, okay, now it's Memento. And then after this last episode, now it's going to be The Sixth Sense.
No Haley Joel.
And then at the very end, it's going to be Primer. Where you go,
I see
what?
Ghost processes.
They went back in time and they took the box. And
it's going to reset the system time. It's fine.
No, you know what? It's going to be Tron. They're all just random programs running around on the internet.
Oh, that was a CGI young Haley Joel.
Another thing they mentioned was that it took like 6 weeks or something for them to get permission to use hackers in that one scene, to use the movie Hackers in that one scene when they referenced
it. I figured that would have been... The hackers people would have wanted that to be out there because it could cause like a whole resurgence and interest in that original movie too.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they had to do, but they said it took them like 6 weeks to get the rights to put that into the
How many
show.
More episodes are left in the first season? Do we know?
Tonight's and next week's.
So they've
it.
Got to wrap it up soon.
9 and 10.
Well, no, okay. They're going to cliffhang it. They're going
to. No, they already have a second season. They got greenlit for a second season before the first episode aired, because they put it out like a month early on social media for free to watch it like all over the place. And I guess it got enough buzz from that a few days before they actually aired it on USA, they actually said, we're going to green light a second season for them, like before it actually aired.
That seems to be kind of a thing now. I see a lot of like shows that are coming up, even as far out as 2016, they're dropping like the first free pilot episode online and just kind of letting it work its way out there.
It seems to me, though, that they really missed an opportunity, though, because having a hack where the new series, one of their new series, has been hacked, and the first four episodes have been stolen and put out on the internet, would have been the like ideal way to
the marketing. The marketing team hasn't been great. I think they could have had a better marketing. I think they've missed a lot of opportunities for marketing because, like, they don't really have any good. Like, they have a site that has some shirts or whatever, you know, some gear, but nothing that good. And the thing
they
is,
do some low hanging hacker puzzles.
They
did.
They didn't make a Mr. Robot patch. Like, it's like the thing. Like, Mr. Robot, he's got the
Etsy
patch.
And eBay,
it's got the
yeah.
robot. You know, they got the pixelated robot head. It says, you know, whatever service. I forgot what it said.
Computer repair service, Mr. Robot.
With a smile
service,
or something.
Yeah.
So basically, they have less marketing sophistication than a YouTube celebrity.
So Dwight Silverman wanted, he had tweeted out that he thought that we should get permission from the Mr. Robot people to show the series like as a marathon at cons one night or whatever. So he tweeted that out, and they tweeted back.
Whoa! Oh, that's awesome. I wonder if that's a stock thing. We got
what did they say?
They put a little. They sent a picture, and it looks like a terminal, and it says "Hello, comma Dwight Hope, period Revolution, period The Necessities of Our World."
Probably an auto. Yeah, it's an
auto thing, but they stuck his name in it, and we took that as permission to use it.
Well, I got an email from them today.
You did?
Well, because I signed up on their mailing list, so. It was just a thing that says, like,
to?
You can add your own this is the funny thing, right? So the show is, like, supposed to be all against kind of like, you know,
big
the 99% big corporation control, like, regaining control of your data. And then I get this email. It's like, hey, Mr. Underline. It's like, you know, turn your name into whatever. Mr. and you put in your name and it does it in their font, right? The font for the show. So it says Mr. and then whatever you put in. But in order to like do that, it's like, oh yeah, put this on all your social media stuff. And to do it, you have to log in with your Facebook account. So they're all against trash talking Facebook and collecting
well,
your data
show.
And all this stuff on the show.
The marketers still
and
run
then
this.
The marketing people have log into Facebook to create your Mr. Robot thing and then paste it on all your social media.
They should give out free shell accounts.
Okay. So
so, so cool.
Watching the show, you get the sense that the writers have at least done some of their research, or they've got consultants that are giving them some good tech advice. But overall, it's still just, you know, it's not Hollywood, but whatever the equivalent is for television. It's just a product produced by.
Yeah, but it's. I think it's a lot better than that. I mean, because like the guy who wrote it, right, and is the showrunner for it, Sam Ismail. I think he has a fair bit of knowledge. Like, I read his Reddit AMA, and I mean, he seemed like he had a fair bit of knowledge. And he's not like a deep end hacker or anything, but he had a fair bit of tech knowledge. And then he had a couple of friends who are like, you know, system engineer guys that do have a lot of knowledge, and so he's getting a lot of stuff from them. But like, they don't green screen anything. Like, everything they do is all the screens are pre-built, and they're actually doing it. All the actors are doing it live, like when it's being filmed.
Right,
and stuff.
But the thought that Malik, the main actor Malik, is probably not computer savvy, probably not a hacker. I mean, it's the same kind of thing.
I don't think he's
same kind of thing with Jim Parsons from Big Bang Theory. I mean, he's an actor, you know, and people. He does such a good job, and he comes across as so nerdy and so geeky in the show.
Yeah, and most of those guys, yeah, I've seen interviews with them where they're like, they had no clue. Like, they had to explain the jokes to
fans them. The fans are disappointed because they'll run up to Jim Parsons and make some kind of Star Trek or Star Wars reference or Doctor Who reference, and he goes, I don't care.
He doesn't know which it is or what it's about.
Yeah. I just got this thing, Malik. The last name is a play on Malloc, like memory allocation, which is a C function that you use a whole lot to grab memory before you start assigning variables and stuff like that. Sorry, just an aside. Malik. No.
But that's his real
name. His real name.
Oh, I thought it was a show character name. See, I don't actually know the show's character. I thought it was his name in the show. I was
his
name man
in
is
the
born
show
to play this role.
Is Elliot Anderson.
So Rami Malik is not the name in the show.
No, that's his actor's name.
His initials are EE, which has its own significance.
Who?
Elliot What?
And his name was Elliot. But yeah.
It's EA, like EA Sports.
Like Electronic
Arts.
Oh,
is it supposed to be like that?
No.
Okay.
No, his name's just, so that's his name.
So gullible.
See, they're missing something because they don't have large numbers of people out there finding fake meaning in things like that that don't mean anything and having that.
They did have a couple of graffiti artists that went around New York, like stencil painting Elliot's character on things with Mr. Robot.
They do that with standard movies, though. I really do think they could have launched, like, you know, some kind of a hackery kind of challenge or just some misinformation.
The website, you know, it's like gives you a terminal.
They should have been at DEF CON.
Yes.
Just like
they
the
really
Big
should
Bang
have,
Theory
yeah.
cast shows up that at Comic Con.
Will Smith showed up at DEF CON last year.
That was like...
Or
yeah,
2 years ago?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah, that's the year you weren't there last year. Yeah, just to research a role. They should have shown up just to see the scene and what have you.
They should have filmed a scene there.
Ooh.
I wasn't really sure how... the people at DEF CON were going to take the show, but everything I talked to several people about it, and it was all positive pretty much. And I saw two or three people talk about the show from stage. Like,
yeah, same here in the
crowd.
And
it was all positive.
The ultimate experience.
And then at the end,
Lost
was wearing the shirt that I had was thinking about buying to wear at DEF CON, and then decided I didn't want to pay extra shipping or whatever to get it here on time. But he was actually wearing that shirt, so. So yeah, it was. It seemed like overall, like people in the community were positive about it. That they did a good job of representing the realities of it or whatever. And it was using, it wasn't Hollywoodized with, like, you know, flashing graphics of things that aren't realistic. Where a
we have to fight the dragon and defeat the firewall.
You know, a
type cookie.
A metal gloved hand from, like, you know, a knight is like punching against this wall trying to break into the firewall.
It's the first time it's been real, so I don't even think the show really had to be that good to get good reception from the community. I just think it had to, like, not blatantly lie to people and, you know, do, like, you know, Mike Tyson punch out graphics to get into systems. Type password here, DA screen, FBI screen. Ah, we got it in four letters. Yes, we're in.
Take this computer that you've never seen before and hack into the CIA systems in 30 seconds.
Swordfish.
Yeah. I'm going to leave out a part of that.
Let's just, yeah, this is where we walk away from that. Let's not even acknowledge that movie, please.
Well, that one, they figured maybe they could distract the audience from what was going on while the main character was being distracted. Too.
All right. Well, enough for Mr. Robot. Now I'm going to go.
Now we're going to need a segment intro for Mr. Robot. I'm kidding.
Robot time.
Maybe that could replace Barrett time.
I don't know if any of y'all are real.
Clunk.
Uh oh. Technical.
There was enough volume, and that was enough at the end. So Apple, by the Apple, there's not a lot, although the whole September 9th and new iPhones by the, say, 18th is getting pretty solid. If you're an iPhone-oriented person and you're looking to replace it, take really good care of your phone for another, you know, month, and... you're either going to be able to get an iPhone 6 for a lower price because they'll have the new ones, or you can go to the latest and greatest. It's really kind of up to you. But so that's something to watch out for. The rumors are, you know, there are some, you know, there's sort of back and forth right now on some of the rumors. The iPad Pro, the 12.9-inch one with Force Touch enabled stylus. Hadn't heard that one before. Is rumored to enter mass production sometime in September or October, which doesn't fit with announcing it, unless they're going to do like the Apple Watch where
every once in a while they do that, like where it's like a month or two out
and a whole bunch of wait and anticipation.
So yeah. They'll have something that's available now or soon, and then something else
so
down the road.
Don't spend their Christmas money until it's available to ship, I guess. But Ming-Chi Kuo at KGI Securities says that's his rumor. He also believes that the larger screened iPad will come with a Force Touch enabled stylus accessory for users to more easily navigate the increased surface area of the tablet. So, rumors about an Apple built stylus accessory began swirling earlier in the year, coming again from Quo. Late last year, the first bit of news surrounding the iPad Pro pointed towards a 12.2-inch display, but it sounds like it's up to 12.9, which is basically like a 13-inch laptop screen. There have been, and this one, you know, I just mention it because it fits with the story. There have been there have been appearances on log files at major sites of an iPad that has the kind of pixel dimensions of the iPad Pro. The reason that's not a good prediction, that's not one where you go, oh, for sure they're going to do it. They do prototypes, and the prototype is going to be there, and it's going to have the screen that they
could even do an emulator and have fake dimensions in there too. That's possible.
So that one I don't, you know, I just, it's worth mentioning that there are little signals out there that something's going on. Another big change is Apple is going to move the iPod stock from the sales floor in the back storage areas of their Apple stores to just be accessories, to just be out on the shelves, which is an interesting, you know, think about how exclusive the iPod was, and going to get one and all that was a big deal, and now we've kind of moved to the point where it's on the regular shelves. So that's a big change. And then finally, you know, there's rumors that the Apple TV is going to get announced at this upcoming event. The live TV thing, you know, some sort of cable cutter service, the latest rumors on it is that it's stalled because they're having trouble. Apple is having trouble cutting a deal with all these different networks. They're looking at the other thing to me that seems to be sort of slipping is they were looking at $30 to $40 a month for their cord cutter thing, which starts getting into territory where, unless you've got some really compelling content, you know, serious channels, that starts getting a little, you know. Frankly, I got an offer from Time Warner for $10 a month for the basic with high def channels.
So say that's still half a cord prices is what they're pitching there at $40 a month.
Kind of, yeah. It's like that's hard to make people, you know, unless their idea is that would drive people to take their thing instead of Netflix or Hulu or something, but it starts getting back up towards a price that I don't know might get in the way of its success.
Android, not Apple, but Android released their next letter. Have you guys heard?
Yeah.
Oh, you have? We didn't talk about
it. It was a perfect beginning of summer kind of thing, and it sort
what
of
was
dated
it.
Marshmallow. I was hoping for milkshake.
That would have been funnier. Marshmallow
would have been
makes
funny,
me
yeah.
think of the whole Ghostbusters thing. He could never hurt us.
They should go with Milk Dud.
Ooh, Milk Dud. Yeah, that's kind of
that's always
ew.
A good one in your product name.
Gotta make, I guess, pick something that you can't make fun of. So if you go to like the main Google campus, they've got like one of the main Android building out front. They've got like 8 to 10 to 12 foot. Like a statues or, you know, androids or something that represents each of the releases. So I was really hoping they were going to have a huge big white marshmallow thing that looked like, you know, it's like they could totally do the nod to Ghostbusters, but it's just an android holding a marshmallow. So it's all about just wasted opportunities, I think.
I think so. And if your company name is going to be Alphabet, you should be coming up with creative. I know they keep having sort of sugar and candy themed stuff for the Android, but
it's all dessert themed, I always thought, because Kit Kat, that's the kind of brand name, but marshmallow, I wouldn't think that, you know, someone would just go eat a whole bag of marshmallows all on their own. I mean, if there's a campfire element, maybe.
No, people do, because they have like that marshmallow fluff, like in the...
But that's a dessert topping, not necessarily a dessert on its own.
I don't know, I know
I
people
argue,
who just eat that.
Okay, well...
They call it marshmallow soup. It's not just for breakfast anymore. Well, I guess it's also time for...
In the world of technology, new things come out every day. Our judges will decide whether to try, buy, or fry.
There's a bunch, so we'll try and hit them quick and see what people think. Have you heard about the new router from Google?
On, right?
On Hub. On Hub. I think. you know, the if you've ever tried to set up a router, you know, to basically, yeah, to us in the studio, not a problem. Frankly, half the time, if you know the brand on the router, you don't even have to look at the card to figure out how to log in as an admin and change stuff. But for normal people who don't set up multiple routers in their time, it's terrible. So Google launched this OnHub, which is in partnership with router maker TP-Link. And there's another Asus-made device in the works. It's $200. It promises to make your Wi-Fi faster and more reliable and give you the ability to update and fix your connection. You know, for the rare times when unplugging it and plugging it back in just won't do. Pre-sale started today, and devices will ship in the coming weeks. It's a tower, kind of like the Apple AirPort Extreme router or the Amazon Echo. The outer shell is removable and comes in blue or black, and there are more colors coming. One of the things is they made it they made the shape that way so that you could put it out in the middle of everything. Because one of the things they discovered is, you know, putting your router behind a closed door or underneath your TV or sitting on the floor is horrible for your Wi-Fi signal. So they want you to be able to put it on the shelf. And then the other thing that's really fascinating with it, and hopefully more companies are going to pick it up, the OnHub has 13 antennas inside it, 12 for casting signal and one for measuring congestion on your network. The software is constantly monitoring channels and frequencies, making sure you're connecting in the most efficient way. Basically, what most routers do today is just it's like if your neighbor had their stereo up too loud and you want to hear what you're listening to, so you just turn yours up louder. So they all just keep trying to drown each other out, and the OnHub is trying to, you know, sort of negotiate in it. There's a lot of Chromecast DNA in the OnHub. It's got an app on your phone called Google On, and it's available for iOS and Android, and that's how you set up your network.
It looks a lot like Amazon's Echo, I think. You know, tall, black, cylindrical, the ring on top, colored ring on top.
It uses sound to find the router in your home. And so then you basically, it makes it really, the setup is through that app, and it's very easy. And it has a light on top that glows green, and if it glows orange, that's like your car's check engine light. It supports Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, plus Google's new Weave language. So, you know, I don't know. $200 is not a, like, impulse buy router.
Although, the top of the end, a lot of the top of the end, you know, you go out and you get a really solid neck gear, or you get, you know, any of the antennas that are in with four antennas and do all this stuff, you can spend easily upwards of $200. You know, that's not hard to do.
Yeah, and this one doesn't look like its name should be Alienware. You know, a lot of routers are not particularly attractive, I will say.
The beefier ones might. I've got one that looks like a small spaceship coming into land. And there's no way I would ever put it out there.
Like spider leg antennas.
Yeah, exactly. You put this on a bookshelf and no one would really notice. It looks like maybe like a little Art Deco vase or, you know, just something that's, you know.
Or you can jack with your techie friends by telling them that it is Echo.
Echo. Alexa.
Go talk to it.
Alexa.
You got to say it louder.
They need to combine like that, put that in there, put in streaming TV, put in, you know, an all-in-one kind of thing. But that might be the form factor to where, you know, it gets from all, like you said, you know, I see something, and a lot of these routers, they look like they want to be against a wall or in a corner just because they've got a front, they've got a back. But yeah. It's not the best place for, you know, Wi-Fi signal propagation.
Well, this may be Google's way to get into the living room, which is funny because it's not a box. It's not like a game box or a Chromecast or something like that.
So it has all these microphones on it, too, and they're just saying, it's just so we can – we're only doing it so we can help you set up your Wi-Fi. Don't worry about the microphones in your house.
I think the sound thing is on the app.
Oh, I'm half joking. But it'd be cool if there were microphones on there. I would like to see someone do a teardown to see what all's in there, how much they left in for quote-unquote like for future use.
The exterior is removable, so – you know, if somebody gets their hands on one, you can pull the outer shell and see what goodness is.
So it kind of looked like Apple's new
the trash can style
when they went to the when they went from the AirPort Extreme to the new version, the AC version.
Yeah,
it suddenly went from, you know, a flat square pancake to like the Apple TV, except like 8 times as tall, but it went to like a big, not cylinder, but a extended rectangle.
Obelisk.
Yeah. Well, one thing they did, which is to keep the not clever people from doing something not very bright, is with it being a cylinder, people won't put stack things on top of the router. So it sounds like they thought about this a good bit.
I put all my Jiffy Pop on top of it.
All my tin hat collections go there. That's aluminum foil hats, too.
So that one, you know, I think that would definitely rate a try if I was in the market for a router right now. I think that it'll be interesting to see when they start coming out and see the tests and see what kind of results.
I'm curious to see what it actually does. Like, if it's with that many antenna, if it truly is directional and, like, if it conserves more power to where it just, you know, powers up the antenna closest to your phone to where it's not, you know, spitting out. Because you go and you can go get, like, a, you know, see all the Wi-Fi access points around you in the neighborhood, and chances are, you know, 5 years ago you turned it up, there might be one or two. Now, especially if you live in an apartment complex or in a neighborhood, there are just dozens and dozens and dozens, and everyone, like Pete said, they're all chattering and, you know, trying to be the one heard, and this would make that a lot more directional.
I would think it would
cut down to the chatter.
My guess would be that it does, just because the Apple one does, and the Apple one's multiple antennas, and it does directional. So if it'll figure out where your device is from, and it will focus more energy on that path.
Well, and if it's got the smarts, it can change channels or do other things for that particular, you know, signal on that angle.
From a security perspective, this is going to change the game a little bit. It's going to be a little bit harder to get into things if you start deploying routers that have CPUs in them that can, you know, go and survey, you know, what else is out there wirelessly, and then react to it intelligently. I mean, that's, you know, that's just a half step away from like an IDS or you know, the robots taking over.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like an improvement, just as opposed to just bigger and better, you know, bigger and more powerful. Got to have some more vacuum tubes in it, bigger antennas. This seems like a kind of I like the solutions when it's a smart solution instead of a brute force usually. Let's see, other things. Fossil has unveiled their Android Wear smartwatch and other wearables. Apparently, they showed off their first three connected accessories, all of which are powered by Intel. There's a connected bracelet, a connected watch, and a smartwatch that runs Android Wear. So they didn't go into a lot of the features, but it looks like there'll be plenty of silver and likely some gold with leather and metal bands. So yeah, so anybody up for a big connected bracelet?
Not I.
Or a watch, an Android Wear watch. I know you would be in the Apple Watch.
I'm looking. Who actually wears watches in here? Just anyway, Groove. I doubt Groove has a watch, right?
Nope.
Nobody.
If I was just that loaded with cash, I'd buy an Apple Watch and try it, but the amount you have to pay to really get one that's even the just sort of medium one, it's a real, like, think about it purchase and a, like, put out some real cash. It's like buying a laptop, actually. And so it's kind of, you know, that definitely discourages me from thinking about doing anything with the first gen, at least. You know, because I know they're going to be, there's going to be, if the Apple, you know, they haven't released the sales numbers, if it's been really successful, when they release the second gen one and it does all the new cool different stuff that the first one didn't, there's just going to be a lot of PO'd people, I'm guessing, out there, unless they have the money to have thrown away. You know, most people don't buy a laptop and then after a year, if a new one comes out, ditch it and get another one. And the watch thing, I guess it is more fashion, but I just can't see. It's one of those, when I buy this stuff, I use it long haul, and so if I'm gonna have to pull out, you know, $700 or $800, that's one that's gonna get some. I that really raises where you think about you could buy instead.
I still have watches that are, you know, 10, 15, 20 years old that still do what they're supposed to do, which is tell time.
I always would like have a watch, and after a few months, the glass on the
front
of it
will
be gone. It'll just be gone. So you go to check the time, and it's like that hands are all bent, and there's no glass, and never knew how I did it. It's not like I live a violent life, but so I have not done the watch thing for quite a long time. It was actually cooler when the glass thing comes off on your digital watch, because then there's all the Speaking of watches, and I put a GIF on the front of Geek Radio.
Really?
But it's an animated GIF, and it doesn't seem to animate on the front page of the site. You have to like click it, and then it launches a thing and plays the GIF animated version. That's a WordPress fail, or somebody's got a fail there, because it's, come on, it's a GIF. If I put the image tag and I embedded that thing with just regular HTML, it'd work. But because I used the media upload, then it...
It looks like it's resizing it, so it's probably doing like the PHP GD screenshot thumb image, and it's doing that up there.
But it's the Rorschach clock, and it looks like, for those of you who haven't gone to our site, it looks like the character from Watchmen. No, it doesn't.
A little creepy.
Well, vaguely. It does vaguely look like his mask. It uses the kind of, you know, the... everybody, maybe when you were a kid, you had the little game that had the magnet kind of stylus and the metal filings, and you could like drag the beard up on the guy's face, where it's the kind of, those kind of ferromagnetic stuff. That's how the clock works, and so the animation, the GIF animation, you couldn't really show it without the animation, because it does it sort of morphs the numbers into the next minute. On what it looks like, and it picks up material from the bottom, and so it's pretty cool. It's called the Ferolic, a clock that displays time by manipulating magnetic fluids. The figures are vague and soft, like the ink blots of the Rorschach test. It was designed to be adjustable by the user. The software behind the electromagnets, and thus the shape and information displayed, can be edited. Ferolic is controlled by an intelligent internal system that is accessible through a web browser. In this way, the users can assign the, quote, the creatures to display time, text, shapes, and transitions. Experienced users can create animations from their own custom shapes. Now, there's a clock. That's a geek clock, I think. You know, the only thing I wonder about is when it's that cool and you can do that much stuff with it, that usually means that that you have to, like, that it costs similarly to, what, an Apple Watch? Or
I'm trying to figure out where in my laptop I can cram money in to make one of these come out.
The finished product isn't just a timepiece. It didn't have this in the original story I saw. Only 24 have been made so far, and they're about $8,300 a piece. There is a hint that there may be a Kickstarter coming down the road to go for a more mass-produced version. But, oy, it's like, geez, for that kind of money, I think, for $8,300, you can get the actor who played Rorschach to come to your house and tell you what time it is.
Well, Voice of Reason is still just only a little over half as expensive as the Primo Apple Watch, right?
They won't know what time it is, and they'll come to me. They'll beg me to tell them what time it is, and I'll say no. That's my terrible Watchmen made-up quote.
Watchmen
thing.
Watch.
Watchmen.
Who watches the Watchmen's watch? And now, cool make your own stuff. Hacking things. And this one, sometimes we talk about, cool device maker, you know, get an Arduino, and maybe some of that stuff, you know, spending the $20 or $50 is too much. The Amazon Dash, the little buttons that you can push to
order product,
send a signal and order product, those are hackable. You can hijack the buttons.
Send me more Tide!
And use them to track any kind of data you like. I mean, really, basically, you push the button, and it sends a signal that says, they pushed this button. I guess if you had multiples, different products, then you would be able to have it signal different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just does a little Wi-Fi, few packets out.
So at the blog Medium, Ted Benson explained how he intercepted his Amazon Dash button signal and turned it into an easy way to track his newborn baby's poops. So you just push the button and I don't know why he's keeping track of that.
every 30, he should order a new pack of diapers.
I guess, but using a simple Python program, Benson was able to search for the button on his Wi-Fi network, snag its MAC address, and set it up to record data into a spreadsheet. The buttons are basically just a Wi-Fi radio and a battery that you can hijack and use to collect whatever kind of data you want. The parts probably don't cost much, but for $4.99 a piece, you don't have to worry about assembly. So you could use the buttons to track the progress of a new habit. This is off Lifehacker had it. You know, I mean, if you think about it, if you were keeping track, like if you were quitting smoking or if you're on a diet and you're trying to, you could use that to, like, how many, when you exercise, you push the button.
Just be sure to make sure everything's firewalled off. And you,
is my exercise.
Yeah.
There you go.
And you do the hack right so you don't, like, you know, 2 days later get 1,000 boxes of Tide.
Well, they're at, you know, I guess the worst case you'd get one because it has a thing for.
Oh,
redundant.
Is there a limit? All right, let me see. The kids
Amazon
can't go and bang
put a thing
on it.
For
okay.
Redundant orders so that you don't suddenly get.
Well, that's
you,
no
when,
fun.
When you order it, is it pre-connected, or do you actually order it and tell them what you want it connected to?
You order right now. You order the buttons, and the button is pre-branded for that particular product.
Yeah, it's got the on the device. It's got like that one's got Huggies. Or Tide, or it's tied to these specific. It's directly tied to the specific.
Is he
product.
Using the Huggies one to track his baby's?
Probably he probably ordered it because he knew he was going to get diapers. But then essentially he's just using it to get timestamps.
It's a lot like was it the Q Cats that were being given away free at Radio Shack, and everyone wanted to go get one because you could do other stuff with them. This is kind of along those lines, yeah.
Yeah. So it's I like the idea that they're, you know, first that it's cheap and that you can then, I don't know how you stop it from, you know, obviously at this guy's blog, he talks about how he intercepted it because clearly you wouldn't want it connected up to your main Wi-Fi doing whatever it's
you would
doing.
Need a router to grab that packet being sent by that MAC address and then do something else with it and not pass it on to Amazon is what you need to do. So,
I guess basically you can say anything could do from it. This routes to here and, you know, make it so it doesn't get out. And then here's a paint. This is a new paint made from glass that reflects the sun, and it's designed to cool down cars and homes. I thought that was kind of interesting. Most traditional paints are made from polymers, and the sun's ultraviolet rays degrade the polymers, which is why, you know, paint fades. But this paint developed by Jason Benkoski and his team at Johns Hopkins is resistant to fading. It's made from a mixture of silica, one of the main ingredients in glass, and potassium silicate, so it isn't brittle. It starts off as a liquid, so it can be brushed or sprayed onto a surface. When it hardens in a few hours, it's almost as hard as rock. I wonder, for a car paint, though, cars flex. You know, you hit a bump or, you know, it seems like there'd be
places where... Yeah, I'm wondering if it would, like, crack or something, or what would happen to it.
Where it might not be so good, but on a house or on a... you know, but apparently because the paint is almost like a liquid version of glass, in addition to being incredibly durable, it also won't absorb sunlight or heat. Surface coated with the paint will remain at air temperature even if the sun has been beating down on it for hours. In fact, it could be slightly cooler because the paint will radiate heat from the other side as well. So, you know, it seems like they're assuming that it acts as advertised. That would be pretty cool on a, you know, awning or on a...
Well, it says it isn't brittle, so that leads me to believe maybe there's just a little bit of flex in there once it dries.
Maybe. Well, though they...
Just a little
let's
bit.
See,
but it also says it's hard
say,
as rock, though.
Yeah,
so
first
kinda...
they say it's like a liquid that isn't brittle.
It's liquid. It's like lava. It's
but
like a liquid rock.
But then it hardens in a few hours almost as hard as rock. So I don't know how it could be not brittle at that point.
Yeah, well, it says it's not brittle, and then it says, but it starts off as a liquid. So two separate things. Yeah, who knows? But yeah, it could still be. That just sounds like a wonder material if that's actually true.
So it may be that we'll see it, because this looks like the kind of thing that even if it's only for some limited use, it does have purposes that could be cool.
Especially in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially here is that we have the week where there's so much energy use that they're worried about the grid. Because this is we've been breaking records all summer for usage, and now even though it's like tomorrow it's going to be cooler, it'll be under 90 I think in a lot of places here in Texas, still they're talking about the usage just keeps partly also we've got schools starting or it's going to start, and one of the things I heard which I hadn't really thought about is of course they go to the teachers go to the schools and what happens, so they're preparing this week, well they turn everything on the kids aren't there yet, but the air conditioners and all the equipment and all that stuff is on, so the load goes up on last week, which was the, you know, starting last week, which is the worst week
ever
of the year for heat, you know, at least in any of the places in Texas that I've been dealing with. Finally, on stuff, Disney, you know, they own Star Wars. Apparently, they are going to have Star Wars themed lands coming up. They're going to Bob Iger,
Forest of Lightsabers,
Jar Jar World.
He said that they're creating a jaw dropping new world that represents our largest single themed land expansion ever. The new lands at Disneyland and Walt Disney World will transport guests to a whole new Star Wars
planet.
Yeah, like,
you will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
That's the new Disney Park slogan.
Come to
more wretched, awesome. More wretched.
It's not just going to be on a loop out in the parking lot. Welcome to Star Wars Land. You'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. I'm Obi-Wan, your guide.
Disney needs a movie. They did Euro Disney without realizing that, oh, wow, Europe actually has real castles that aren't plastic. So that didn't do too well. And then they did the Disney Safari stuff, and I think the trucks kept running over the animals. The animals were dying off lot, and they tried to not talk about that. So
sort of the reverse Jurassic
World. Yeah, thing. As long as Guido doesn't go shooting all the attendees, I think this part could maybe work.
Well,
and assuming J.J. Abrams doesn't sink, you know, the new next three.
Opening
the next
Disney
one.
Park in Europe and staffing it entirely with French people, I have a feeling that somebody didn't think that one out all the way. So, that was Try by a Fry. I don't know. I guess you wonder, okay, the Star Wars-themed land thing might actually be, I guess, on the one hand, it may be incredibly lame, or maybe it could be sort of equivalent to, like, the Harry Potter-type experience. Because, I mean, that's one of those things that, you know, with the new Star Wars movie, there's going to be a generation of people who their first really big exposure to it full-on is going to be this next three. You know, as opposed to my poor kids whose deals were all the prequels, which they, you know, they're kids, so a lot of it just kind of passes by, and so they weren't, you know, they weren't upset like us old farts, but it did, you know, they didn't rewatch those like a lot of other movies that that came out around the same time, so they didn't repeat, you know, they didn't get into it that far, but. You know, I just wonder, you know, if they're going to make up its own whole new different world, then you wonder, is it going to have too much to the theme park side and not enough, like, devotion to the original source material? You know, like I haven't been, I guess if I was ranking it, I probably would want to try the Harry Potter thing before I would go to the Disney, Star Wars world.
They're doing an 11-acre Toy Story land. They said later that's one of the planned ones.
Oh, there's a there's
yeah.
a
that's Florida's
one,
Hollywood
one of
Studios.
The theme
yeah.
parks has a Simpsons like a Springfield.
I've seen shots of like a huge Moe, and they actually did Moe's Tavern, and they recreated this somewhere in Florida, but I didn't know where that was. That's the same thing, you think?
It's something similar, yeah.
They had actual flaming Moes made with cough syrup.
It's a night I'll never forget or barely remember.
So, I guess.
As long as they don't make an Avatar land. They're making an Avatar 2. And I heard that he sealed up Avatar 3 and Avatar 4 funding for that. That's just. And then Top Gun 2 is also coming out.
That, what? Yeah, there's.
It's drones. It's drones based.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So it's guys sitting in a room somewhere in Vegas or in Nevada.
Yeah, it's like, I wonder if the Cheeto Dust is going to be CGI or if Tom Cruise will actually have, you know, like Cheeto Dust on his drone piloting fingers. Yeah, supposedly it's going to be the director, whoever has it, said that, hey, we want to bring it, you know, more modern. It's more about drones. But how are you going to play, like, you know, the Danger Zone song with drones? I don't see how that's going
to
work.
Listen to it
we'll
on
see.
Headphones.
It's going to be
yeah, I guess so.
Or it's going to be 8-bit.
The drones are going to get sentient and Tom Cruise is going to go out and shoot him down.
Highway to the Danger Drone. I don't know.
Yeah, let's see. The odds are that it's all this, you know, remote piloting stuff. Oh my goodness,
we need
somebody
real pilot.
Who can actually pilot. We need somebody who's small enough to fit in the drone. You, Tom Cruise, you could do it.
You have to jump the drone. I hope it doesn't.
Actually, he's going to be the best drone pilot ever. That's what this one's about.
Well, although part of it, you know, the like third act, you know, where somebody where there's the disaster and now so it's the sad part of the movie. It's not going to be quite so sad when he remotely crashes some plastic drone into, you know, into a mall or whatever and you know, is upset about it and goes off and sulks.
You're going to fly it like he's going to fly it upside down right next to a Russian drone.
Yeah.
And then they're gonna go like, I feel a need for speed, and they're gonna go get on those video arcade racing motorcycles.
You think we just tweet pictures at the Russian MiGs?
I won't fly with you because you're too wild. Goose's drone would still be alive instead of crashed into that used car lot floppy man airman. If it weren't for you, Maverick. So, I think we've already outlined a better Top Gun 2 than is likely to hit the theater.
Yeah, I think we should start principal photography.
And,
we're ready.
You know, sadly, in this day of you know, legal gay marriage in the country, Top Gun 2 will be like 90% less homoerotic than the first.
The volleyball scene is going to be replaced by some dudes on couches playing, like, you know, Gears of War.
Or
Pong.
playing whatever female anime volleyball game there is for Xbox
right.
One.
Only slightly tangential here.
Hi, this is Dr. Krieger, and you're listening to Technology Bites Radio.
That's awesome. Did you get that in California?
I got that in California. You didn't see
we
that
need
yet?
To use that. No, all the time.
Yeah, maybe we... Yeah, actually, maybe send me that and let's see if we can kind of...
Work that
work
into the
into
weird
into
science?
The, yeah, into this.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious...
So, yeah.
You didn't see it before?
Well, and the nice part is if we take that where he's talking about technology bites, we can get any sound bite from any episode of Archer that he's spoken in and maybe put something together with, I don't know, clones. And...
Hi, this is Dr. Krieger, and you're listening to Technology Bites Radio.
Yeah, he was very
Afflicted could work that, yeah.
He's
yeah.
got a heck of a good... microphone voice. That's yeah. just on your phone, right?
Yeah, it was on my phone. Unfortunately, H. John Benjamin got away before I could approach him for something similar. He didn't stick around. He stuck around for the interviews and the photos, but then for the group photo and any kind of casual hang on, he was just gone.
It's like that Technology Bites guy's going to corner me for my voice. Gotta
he's
go.
Looking at, he's looking at me like he wants
he's,
something.
He's aiming a phone at me. Ooh, oh, wow. Hey, look. And I'm down to 5% on my laptop battery.
Well,
so this is perfect.
Since we did the intro to it, I'll do one science story, which is apparently chimpanzees and monkeys have entered the Stone Age. So in another 60,000 years, it could be Planet of the Apes time. There's links to all the other stories that we didn't cover at geekradio.com.
All right. Well, we're glad you could tune in. Stick it out with us this week. We're going to get out of here, but we will be back next Wednesday night for more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovo.
You hear a lot in the news about the 1% and the power they've got. Well, KPFT wants you to be part of a 1% this hour. You can help power independent music and ideas in the process. KPFT's crowdfunding campaign is underway. We're raising money to land a new transmitter, which means the radio you love will be heard stronger and farther than ever before. And with this campaign still going strong, we can go over the goal and pay back the debt that KPFT has incurred to bring you great radio all day, all year long. Just giving 1% toward our goal is $200. Please visit kpft.org and click the blue button on the right to donate. Thank you. This is KPFT Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at Houston. This is commercial-free.